Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is your new Comics Wednesday episode for March 4th, 2020. I'm going to be talking about a few of the books that I've had a chance to read already that are hitting stands today. And I'll also give a rundown of a few other titles that you may be interested in picking up. Before I dive into all that, I'm doing a flashback episode for Webtoon Wednesday again this week. Haven't really had any meaningful communication with Webtoon. Don't know if I'm going to be able to continue my relationship with them. Reach out to them again this week to see if I can get any insight on that. So apologies to those who are hoping for new Webtoon content. The other thing I'll mention is probably going to do a Comic Talk episode pretty soon. There's been I guess I would say progress or more news or clarity might be the word that I should use concerning the future of DC now that Dan DiDio has left, and some things are kind of coming to light. They're saying one thing, but the announcements and the books that are coming out and the changes to things that have already kind of leaked out or been announced are kind of telling in a way. So I do want to talk a little bit more about that, but that's not what you're here for this episode. You're obviously here to hear about the books that are coming out today. So I'm going to start off with a title from Image called Mercy. It's from creator Mirka Andolfo. I think that's how you say it, Mirka. She handles just about everything. She's doing the writing. She's the artist. She handles the colors. There is a color assist to Gianluca Pape. And then letters are by Fabio Amelia. So obviously this is a passion project for Mirka, being that she's putting all this work into it. And she's had some other series before that she's done some heavy lifting, and she's worked as just the primary artist on some books in the past as well. But this one feels, as I said, very much like a passion project. It's kind of Victorian times, set in Seattle or Washington anyway, in the 1800s. And it's very much horror, very noirish, and it feels a little bit mysterious to start off. We certainly have more questions than answers. We're kind of thrown in the middle. There's some terrible accident or event that happens in this town of Woodsburg in Washington State. And just based on kind of the camera angle of when this thing goes down, we're not even sure what it is. We're not sure who's there in terms of the characters or whatnot. And so as the story progresses in issue one, you certainly do get a lot more questions and answers. It's not the most accessible first issue I've read. Now, that being said, it's not like you have missed anything. This is a first issue. These are new characters, new story, new world. So it's not inaccessible the way that some people complain about superhero comics, where, you know, it's because you need to know 50 years of back history to understand what's going on. That's not it here. We're just kind of being thrown into the story while it's already kind of moving. The train has left the station, so to speak, and it's just not clear. And I'm sure throughout the story, Mirka's going to kind of fill in those details. So it's, a technique of storytelling. It's a type of storytelling we've seen before. To be honest with you, I'm a little tired of it. It feels a little tropey. And I don't know. Maybe it was that I just wasn't in the mood to read a horror comic, especially one as noirish as this, that it just didn't grab me. Now, all that being said, the artwork by Mirka is absolutely incredible. Every time I've seen any of her work, it's been outstanding. And the fact that she's coloring it as well. So really she's, able to bring the vision and the world that she sees in her head to life on the page. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous book. I'm almost tempted to just keep reading it for the artwork alone. I'm definitely going to check out the second issue, because like I said, I feel like part of why it didn't grab me is maybe I just wasn't in the mood to read this type of story when I sat down to read it. But I wanted to read it because I wanted to talk about it to let you all know my thoughts. So I'm just not sure. The jury's still out on this one for me, whether or not I think it's something really great or it's just okay. You know, I mean, Mirka's art, as I said, is absolutely outstanding. So it would never be in my mind a below average comic with her handling the art duties. And I should also mention that in terms of storytelling from panel to panel for the artwork and then pacing of the writing and the dialogue, that's all handled really, really well. Mirka is clearly a talented creator beyond just being able to create artwork. She knows how to tell a story in this medium in terms of the pacing, the plotting, and the dialogue, the scripting. So it's a very technically beautiful comic. It's well put together. And if you like these kind of stories, a lot of female characters, very capable, it seems. And as I said, the 1800s, very noirish, very mysterious. So I have a feeling it's going to be a big hit, actually. So it's a number one. If you're at your comic shop, you probably want to flip through it. If you are at all interested, you know, pick it up because there may be some value there later on. But for me personally, I'm just not sure if it's something I'm going to be in for the long haul on, just because I don't know if the story is going to interest me that much. So as I said, it's I think it's worth at least picking up and flipping through. And just based on the artwork, it's probably worth picking up the first issue to see if you like it. There's some really great covers too. The cover that Mirka did is just outstanding. I mean, you look at that cover and it tells you so much just from the Victorian dress, the beautiful artwork, and then whatever kind of supernatural aspect to the cover. It really, it's a great way to encapsulate what the story is about just by looking at the cover. Plus the logo, Mercy, is stylized and looks kind of creepy. And again, it just, you look at that picture and you know right away, okay, story set in the 1800s, you know, has to do with some female leads in the story, and things are kind of weird and creepy. So it's pretty cool that you can get all that in one picture. So as I said, pick it up, flip through it, see if it grabs you, and certainly reach out and let me know on Twitter if it's something that you want to that you really like. If there's something about it you like, something that I'm missing, please, by all means, let me know. All right, next book I'm going to talk about is Superman Villains Number 1. This is from a big group of creators. We've got Brian Michael Bendis, Matt Fraction, and Jody Hauser handling the writing duties. On art, we have Michael Gatos, Riley Rosmo, Scott Godlewski, Brian Hitch, Cully Hamner, Steve Lieber, and Jim Mahfood. For colors, we have Gatos, Yvonne Placencia, Gabe Eltab, Alex Sinclair, Dave McCaig, Nathan Fairbairn, and Jim Mahfood. And for letters, Dave Sharp, Clayton Cowles, Tom Napolitano, Troy Pateri, and Josh Reed. So a huge who's who of creators here, a lot of them being Brian Michael Bendis' friends. So Superman Villains Number 1, this is the one-shot. It was actually supposed to come out about 3 weeks ago, I think. And I just have to wonder, like, why was this so late considering there's these many people working on it right now? I understand it's more than just 20 pages. It's I think 30 pages, so it's almost double-sized. But this many people working on it, you would have think they could get it out on time. But whatever. It like I said, it's people reacting to Superman coming out and telling people he's Clark Kent. Villains reactions for the most part. That's why it's called Superman Villains. Although, it starts off with, Superman visiting Ma and Pa Kent, who are apparently alive again in this iteration of the DC universe. So that's a little strange. I'm not sure when that happened exactly, because they were alive in the Byrne era and, for a long time in that era. And then, in the New 52, they weren't. So, yeah, I'm just not sure. And that's kind of the Superman that we had before with the New 52. And then we had the Superman from Convergence, who was the post-crisis but pre-Flashpoint Superman that was married to Lois and had the son that then took over for the New 52 Superman. And then the rebirth happened and it kind of incorporated some aspects of the New 52 Superman's history into the Superman that was post-crisis but pre-Flashpoint, but he remembered it. These things happened to him, even though they didn't. Yeah, right? Okay, it's not confusing at all. But anyway, my point being, Ma and Pa Kent are back. Apparently that's canon now. But why they're showing this aspect of Superman and the choice he made to reveal his identity, which is a whole podcast in and of itself. But why they're showing the reaction to that in a Superman Villains book, I couldn't say. Some of the other reactions are kind of what you would expect. There's especially probably my favorite part of the book is Luther receiving phone voicemails from people giving him a bad time about him not knowing that Clark was Superman. That's a great scene. We have an interesting story with a toy man that kind of ties in with some other stuff that Brian Michael Bendis is doing. There's a lot of stuff with the Daily Planet and the Invisible Mafia, even to the point where it looks like that's sort of the, in my mind, the main reason for this. It kind of ends with a big event as it pertains to the Daily Planet and Superman is supporting cast. And we're going to see a lot of that, the repercussions of that play out in Superman in Action Comics. We even gives us that tease there at the end to be continued in Superman and Action Comics. Some of the stuff's kind of throwaway. We get Supergirl kind of reacting and, you know, she's infected with the deceased stuff right now. The disease, Batman Who Laughs Last, intended for Superman, then infected Supergirl. So she's not real happy about what's going on because she's, you know, not herself, I guess you'd say. But really, like I said, at the heart of this, despite it being called Superman Villains, I feel like this book is a Daily Planet book. Like, it moves that story with the Invisible Mafia and just the machinations that have gone on in that series by Bendis. That's what this book moves forward with the most. It moves that narrative forward the most. I haven't been a big fan of Action since Bendis took it over. I think I've talked about this a lot on Superman Sunday. I feel like he's trying to turn Action Comics into a crime noir book. That just doesn't work for me with Superman. But it's interesting because what he did in this issue, this Superman Villains book, is pretty interesting, actually, just in terms of, like, a cool story. Like, it doesn't need Superman, and maybe that's why I've been not a fan of the Action Comics run, because I feel like Superman is an afterthought to it. You could put any hero in his place. It doesn't matter because he's not doing like Superman type stuff. Yes, it's the Daily Planet. Yes, it's investigative reporting and whatever, but it feels like it doesn't need to be Superman. You could just focus on Clark Kent. You could take Clark Kent, Superman out of the book altogether and substitute, you know, some sort of street level character that works well with something that's noirish, like The Question, and it would be perfect, right? You don't even need Superman, the Guardian or somebody like that, somebody just more street level. And it feels like Superman's wasted in the book. So whatever. I mean, if that's the story Bendis wants to tell, I mean, he's the writer, but it doesn't feel like it gels for me, especially being Action Comics. You know, we're up above 1,000. It should be a flagship title. It should be something that's, you know, big and bombastic and feels very super heroic. And it's not. It's not that right now. So, yeah, just my own personal feelings, you know, how much I love Superman. So it's just kind of tough for me to reconcile. And again, this book didn't feel... it's Superman Villains, and yes, we do get some villains' reactions, but they're almost like little, you know, like one-page, two-page stories, and the vast majority, like I said, is devoted to something completely different. So it feels a little bit like false advertising in a way. The other thing is the style of art. So there's a bunch of different styles of art in here. Obviously, you know, Gatos and Rosmo and Hitch and Cully Hammer, they all have very different styles, but there are a few artists in here whose styles tend to be a little closer together, like Michael Gatos and Jim Mahfood. And I have to say, I'm not a big fan of either of their art. In my mind, it's a Superman book, so you should have the very best artist on here. And maybe it's because Bendis just likes these particular type of artists that give this kind of gritty feel. And it's just, again, it's just not something that I enjoy. It doesn't feel like it fits Superman for me. Same kind of feeling I get with Alex Maleev on Leviathan. I'm supposed to be like a Superman story, but it doesn't really feel like it when you look at the art, you know, because the colors are often kind of dark and muddy, and muted, and it just doesn't feel like Superman. And so there's a few stories in here where the art is like that. Probably the ones that Michael Gatos does that I notice the most, where I'm just like, man, this is hard to look at. So again, just not a fan of that style of art. Comics don't need to look that realistic in my mind. Again, it's part of what gives it that noirish feel, that crime noir feel. And it doesn't suit Superman in my mind. So, all right, moving on to the next book, what I'm going to talk about next. Let's talk about Flash 750. This is another one with obviously a bunch of different creators worked on it. We have writers Joshua Williamson, Marv Wolfman, Jeff Johns, Francis Matapole, and Brian Buccioletto did one of the stories. And then we also have a flash forward epilogue by Scott Lobdell. And then for pencilers and artists, we have Rafa Sandoval and Steven Segovia, Riley Rosmo, Scott Collins, David Marquez, Francis Manipole. On that flash forward epilogue, it's Brett Booth handling the pencils and Norm Ratman doing the inks. I think Norm is actually the only, I take that back. The first story also has Steven Segovia and Jordi Tarragona on inks. All the rest of the stories, the artists that I already named off did their own inks. For colorists, we have Arif Prianto, Ivan Plasencia, Michael Ateye, Alejandro Sanchez, and Luis Guerrero. So again, a big who's who of artists and creators on the stories. And then there's a series of pinups as well. We have Howard Porter with colors by Hi-Fi. We have Evan Doc Shaner. We have Mike McCone and Michael Ateye on another pinup. Mitch Garrods handles one. Dale Eaglesham with Mike Ateye on colors. And the last one's by Kari Randolph with Peter Steigerwald handling the colors. So a huge amount of creators working on this Flash 750. It's kind of in that same vein and format that we saw for Action Comics 1000 and Detective 1000 and then Wonder Woman 750. So big oversized issue. Tons of great stories. The first one by Joshua Williamson feels very much like it fits into the story he's been telling in Flash ever since Rebirth started. I know it's Joshua Williamson's favorite character, the Flash. I think he might be the only guy who is still working on a Rebirth title. Like, everybody else has moved on to other stuff. Tom King, Brian Michael Bendis came in onto the Superman book. So Joshua Williamson, the only guy who's still going strong. He's up to about 100 issues on Flash now, which is just it's really cool. Like, I love that he's written it for that long, because I feel like he has such a great handle on who Barry is. And, you know, the Flash family has a big supporting cast these days, like it did in the heyday of Jeff Johns on the book with the Tornado Twins and such. A lot of people, that's their Flash. But while he's still here, he's still around, he still gets a story in this book. So the main story here, as I said, it feels very much like it fits into the run that that Joshua Williamson has been writing since Rebirth started. And I really enjoyed it. Williamson did a great job of fitting this story and this narrative into what the story that he's been telling, the arc that he's been telling, the overarching run. But at the same time, he still put stuff in here that forwarded that. It moved forward. He didn't lose momentum. It wasn't like this was an anniversary issue where it was throwaway. You know, like, it was just a celebration of Flash, and it didn't move forward the narrative that he's been crafting for such a long time. That's not to say that in his story, it didn't celebrate Flash and remind you of what a great character Barry Allen is, because he did that really well. So it was a great balance between the two. He was able to celebrate Flash, or remind us who Flash is, and really remind us of a lot of the history of the character and the sort of the legacy of the character and what's made Barry Allen such a great character all these years, while still moving his own story forward that he's been building up to in recent issues of The Flash. So for that reason, my hat's off to him. It's just an incredible job. Great issue. The one by Scott Collins and Marv Wolfman is a Captain Cold story. And holy moly, is it a lot of fun. Actually, I take that back. It's not Marv Wolfman. It's Jeff Johns. It's Jeff Johns and Scott Collins. And yeah, Captain Cold story, super fun, super hilarious. It really ticked off all the boxes for me. You know, Jeff Johns writing a Flash story is great. Jeff Johns writing a Captain Cold story is even better. I like Jeff Johns. I've met Jeff Johns. He's a super nice guy. I wish he would write more comics like a lot of fans do, but I'm not one of these people who like worships at the altar of Jeff Johns. Like, I know there's just a certain subset. They love his Green Lantern, best Green Lantern ever. They love his Flash, best Flash ever. I don't know that Jeff Johns is my favorite writer. I don't know if he's my favorite Flash writer. That being said, if Jeff Johns were to write a Captain Cold title, I would pick it up for sure. I just based on the strength of this story, it's just absolutely incredible. So, so good. It's called Beer Run, and it's basically Captain Cold going out on a beer run. And it's just as fun and silly as you would like. So I really enjoyed it. The Francis Manapul and Brian Buccioletto story, it harkened back to when Flash launched with the New 52. So seeing that art back together with the kind of story that Buccioletto and Manapul tell, that was good. I enjoyed that because I enjoyed their run. I think their run was underrated. I kind of wish it had lasted longer. I think those two guys work really well together. The Marv Wolfman and Riley Rossimo story was just okay. It might be just because I'm not a big fan of Riley Rossimo's style of art. I mean, it's Marv Wolfman, so you like that. But I don't know. It didn't really do much for me. I think I would have liked to have seen a different artist on it. It might have been more interesting. And then the second Joshua Williamson story is actually a Jay Garrick story with David Marquez on art, who I don't know that he's ever drawn a Flash story before. I don't think he has. And the art on that is what really, really stands out. That and the fact that at the end of that story, we get a to be continued in The Flash in 2020, which kind of shows me that, hey, maybe Jay Garrick is going to show back up in the regular Flash title, and that has to have fans of the Justice Society really intrigued. The last story I mentioned, it's an epilogue to Flash Forward by the writer of that series, Scott Lobdell, really the whole creative team, because you got Brett Booth on pencils and Norm Ratman on inks and Luis Guerrero on colors. This is a story, like, so if you're really into the whole DC Rebirth thing and you've been following Flash Forward and you love Wally West and you want to know about the fallout from Heroes in Crisis and what's going to happen with Doomsday, Clock having ended and the hints of things in there. And then we had Rebirth and leading into Doomsday Clock, but then Jeff Johns left and not sure how they're all going to reconcile everything. And then we have, you know, we have the Generation 5 or 5G stuff that was all rumored that is now changing because of the Dan DiDio leaving. But you kind of want to get an idea of what's going to happen. You want to read this story. You want to pick up Flash 750 and read this story because it gives hints of how they're going to reconcile everything. And it gives hints of why they were going to go with 5G and what 5G was going to be. So it's going to be really interesting in the near future here to see what 5G actually is, because it is changing. And as I said, we're going to do a spotlight on that soon and give you an idea of what that might be. But this is an important story. It might just be an epilogue to Flash Forward, but it's a very important story to the future of the DCU. Plus, you get to see Wally West in the Mobius chair, and that's always a great thing, and really cool Brett Booth art. with there's some pages in the story, man, that just have so many characters on them. You know, the Legion of Superheroes, the Justice Society, just all kinds of different, a bunch of the 90s villains. We've got Superman in his black suit and Bat Azrael, and we've got Parallax. We've got the Anti-Monitor in his old suit. So, yeah, it's really, really great looking art. So, if for no other reason, pick it up for that, because it gives a glimpse and an idea of what we're going to have in the future with the DC Universe, and you're going to want to check that out. All right, up next I'm going to talk about probably the most anticipated book, I guess I'll say, for this week. It's the one that has a lot of people talking. It's Strange Adventures, written by Tom King. We have interior art by Mitch Gerrits and Evan Doc Shaner. Letters are by Clayton Cowles. So this is the Eisner Award-winning team that brought you Mr. Miracle, namely being King and Gerrits, and we're adding Doc Shaner in here. They're telling a story about Adam Strange. It's called Strange Adventures. The reason you have two interior artists, basically, one of them is crafting the story that's on Earth. That's Mitch Gerrits. And then Evan Doc Shaner is crafting kind of the flashback scenes, telling the story on Ran. And I don't want to give too much away because we don't like to get too spoilery here, but I'm just going to say this. This story and this series and what the creators are trying to do, it's an examination of the truth, which makes it a very cerebral book and a book that after you read it, you're going to have to give it a lot of thought. Now, that being said, there's not much here in the first issue. We haven't gotten far enough along the narrative to really have a lot to sink our teeth into as far as, okay, I'm going to think about what it means, what is the truth, and how that changes based on people's perspective. We just haven't gotten there yet. This is a little bit of setup. That's not to say it's not an interesting issue. It's not to say that you can't see the seeds already being planted. And there's a character that shows up at the end. I don't know how many of you have heard who the other main character of this is going to be, but it's a character who I find very intriguing, and the way he's introduced and the reason he's coming into the story makes a lot of sense. And I love the fact that we're going to get to see Tom King's take on this character. So I know a lot of people are saying, oh, this is, you know, Mr. Miracle all over again, and it's so good. It's like the greatest thing ever written. Hey, man, Tom is my friend. I love Tom King. I think he's super talented, but I don't know how you can say that just based on this one issue and the kind of the amount of story we get. It did evoke in me that feeling that I got after reading Mr. Miracle number one, namely, I need issue two right now. I want to read more of this. I want to read the whole story right now. But, you know, I don't know how you can say this is the best thing he's ever written just based on this first issue. There's just not enough here yet. We haven't gotten far enough down the path. So it's still a wait and see. Do I recommend it? Absolutely 100% I recommend it. And I think there's going to be a lot here. I personally think that I'm going to like it more than Mr. Miracle. Mr. Miracle was a lot about dealing with trauma and life and being able to handle things like being a superhero and having all these responsibilities and juggle that with wanting to start a family. And, you know, that's how you could kind of relate to it as a normal everyday kind of person. So there were those ideas, you know, somebody being broken and depression and trauma and things like that. Those are interesting concepts to me, but they're not things that I sit around and think about like all the time sort of thing. But this story in Strange Adventures is, from what I can tell from the first issue, all about what is the truth? What does it mean to be tell something that's true and you're telling the truth? And, you know, maybe as recently as 5 or 6 years ago, used to just think the truth was the truth, right? And then with the way the politics and divisiveness and political parties and this and that have happened in this country, all of a sudden, with the president we have and his talking heads and his puppets and sycophants or whatever telling us that there's fake news and the truth isn't necessarily the truth. I mean, I always thought that the truth was the truth. It's black and white. So that's a lot of what Tom King is going to be exploring here. And that's something that I'm really interested in. That is something that I could sit around and think about. Because really, when it comes down to it, it's all about perspective, right? two people could see the same story and events unfold, but they come at it from a different perspective, and it's colored from their own values and principles and the past and who they are as people. And so when they're looking at the same event, they could have a different opinion on it. They could have a different way of telling somebody about the events. And to each of those people, it's the truth as far as they're concerned. But yet they could be coming at it from such a different angle that their stories almost seem to contradict. So you would think if two people are telling you about the same event and their stories contradict each other, that one of them must be lying or not telling the truth. But that might not necessarily be the case. And that's something that's really interesting to me. So I think that's what this story is going to be about. That's kind of the hints that Tom has given. And he's said similar things or things that lead me to believe that in interviews that he's done talking about the series. So that, based on what we've seen in the first issue, gives me a pretty good idea of what the story is going to be. And I think that's the path that the story is going to take. So all that being said, that is something that is really intriguing to me, more so than exploring trauma and the things that they explored in Mr. Miracle. So I think that's the reason I say I'll probably like this book, this 12-issue miniseries or maxi series, even more than I liked Mr. Miracle. But yeah, you never know. You never know. So as far as the artwork, you know, it's Mitch Garrett's. He won an Eisner for Mr. Miracle. I think the art here is even better. It's a little less kind of out there, I think. It's a little more straightforward, less experimental, at least to start off. And then Doc Shaner, I mean, his art is just like classic Silver Age art. Like when you, and I think I heard Tom say something similar to this, when you picture what comic book art should look like, you're picturing like Doc Shaner art. That's what comic art is. So, again, I recommend it. I don't think it's like the greatest thing ever after only one issue, but, it's certainly worth picking up. And I'll also say this, these kind of stories that Tom tells are not necessarily for everybody. I know there were certain people who picked up Mr. Miracle and they didn't like it. They complained about, the art and the things that Mitch was doing. They didn't pick up on the subtlety of it and they just hated it and they bashed it online. And I didn't really think that was fair because a lot of what I saw was that it was lazy writing and it was lazy art and you shouldn't like it. Not everybody's going to like everything and that's okay. So if you pick up Strange Adventures number one and you don't like it, then don't spend your money on it. Don't buy any subsequent issues. It's if you don't like the first issue, you're probably not going to like the rest of the issues. So do yourself a favor. Don't pick it up and don't go online and bash people when they're doing the best that they can. And I'm just saying that not to, you know, protect Tom or Mitch or whatever, because there's going to be tons of people that love the books and they don't really need that. I'm saying it to anybody who picks up the first issue and doesn't like it, like don't torture yourself. Don't go spend your money on something else. You know, it's just like somebody watching a TV show. If you don't like it, there's plenty of great TV shows. Just change the channel. It's the same thing here. So, if you're not sure if you're going to like it, pick up the first issue. And if it doesn't resonate with you, then just be done. There's nothing wrong with that. So, but I like the first issue and I can't wait to read more. So, I'm sure we'll be talking about subsequent issues as they come out. All right, next book I'm going to talk about is Batman 90 from writer James Tynion IV. Art is by Jorge Jimenez, colors are by Tomeu More, and letters are by Clayton Cowles. Batman's like the hottest book on the planet right now. 89, like sold out like crazy because it had like a little tiny one small horizontal panel with like Punchline's mouth, who's like the Joker's new right-hand girl / girlfriend type Harley Quinn substitute, I guess you'd say. I mean, she barely showed up, but yet the book flew off the shelves. I'm not sure why this one's as hot. It might be because there's a new villain called the Designer who's being introduced in this issue. Or might be just because Tynan's doing great things on Batman. Not sure, but I just know this one's going like gangbusters. Like they announced last week before the book even came out that it was already going to a second printing. So it had already sold out. So that being said, is it a good issue? Yeah, it really is. Tynan's telling a fun story here. This is Dark Designs Part 5. He feels like he's telling one big epic story, kind of in the tradition of Hush or Nightfall or that kind of thing. And as much as I love what Tom King was doing on Batman, and I wish he could have stayed on and finished his 100 issues like he wanted, but that was a much more cerebral book. It was much more thinking and exploring. And what Tynan has done is he's really put the pedal to the metal in terms of action. And it's a real change of pace for Batman. I think they're both legitimate ways to tell Batman stories. I feel like we've gotten sort of the best of all the different types of Batman stories in recent memory. Like over in Detective, we have sort of the timeless classic Batman, who's not only a great crime fighter, but also a great detective. As I said, they're just instantly classic and they feel like they could fit into any era of Batman. And then with the Tom King stuff, we had a more cerebral look at it and a little more experimental. And it was interesting, and Bruce was absolutely being pushed to the limit psychologically. And so that was really fun to see. And now with Tynan, we're getting the avenging Dark Knight. And he's putting Bruce to he's pushing him to his limits in a different way, like more of a physical way, more of a challenging him in a heroic way. Attacking not just Batman, the Batman persona, but also attacking Bruce Wayne. And it's really interesting, really fun, and it feels kind of like nonstop action, kind of fun popcorn kind of movie where Batman, Bruce Wayne, is not even getting a chance to take his breath because it's one villain after another, and there's multiple villains in each book, and Catwoman's back, and just really, really fun Batman stories that are classic in a different way from what Brad Walker and Peter Tomasi are doing over in Detective. So I can understand why it's so hot. I hope it's not just that people are picking these up to try to cash in on some new character. I hope people are reading the title, because Batman's back to being fun. Fun in a different way. Like, again, I love Tom King's run. I liked it better than Scott Snyder's run. And it was fun for me because it gave you a lot to think about. Some people don't like that in their comics. They don't want to be sitting around thinking about it the next day. They just want to be entertained. And that's what Tynan's doing here. Some of the most entertaining Batman stories we've had in a long time. And as I said, they're classic in that they harken back to big bombastic stories like Hush, Nightfall, Night's End, No Man's Land, where it's just going to be a big, long arc with a lot of stuff that happens, and one that people talk about for a long, long time to come. So I could definitely see Tynan's run turning into that. As far as the art, this is Jorge Jimenez. I think this is the first issue of Batman he's drawn, and he knocks it out of the park. His artwork here, because where I've seen most of Jorge's stuff, obviously he did a little bit of work on Superman. He did a lot of the Super Sons artwork. And then he was on Justice League with Scott Snyder for a long time. His art on Justice League was really, really great, but I feel like it was a little looser, a little more of a sketchy style. Here on Batman, he's tightened it up quite a bit, and this is a gorgeous, gorgeous book to look at. Love the design on, no pun intended, on the designer. I love the flashback costumes he gets to do in this one for some of the Batman villains. But it's just gorgeous. And he's made a lot of improvements in his storytelling. And that's not to say that he wasn't good, like right from the start. I always felt like from the first time I saw his artwork, his transitions were good. The story was easy to follow, and he's only improved since then. He's probably gone from, a 6 or a 7 on storytelling and panel layouts and such to a 9 in my book. Like, this is just a stunningly beautiful book to look at in terms of the storytelling style, the backgrounds. And Tomeu Morey, super underrated as a colorist. I don't hear his name enough when you're talking about, you know, like top three colorists in comics. He does an incredible job, especially with some of these scenes at night with the skylines and such. And the cover on this one, there is a variant cover that's the Riddler, that's kind of okay. It's the it's Francisco Mattina, you know, so it's kind of that airbrushed digital painted looking, and that one's okay. It's not bad by any means, but the regular cover by Jorge Jimenez and Tomeu Morey is just awesome. It's a Gotham skyline, and it's beautiful. It's as good as any Gotham skyline I've seen, with Batman and Catwoman there. And it's stunningly good. So if you want to get your hands on Batman 90, you better get to your shop early, because it's one of those titles that's going to sell out. I mean, I'm sure any respectable shop's going to have it, you know, one copy per customer, but it's going to sell out tomorrow by an hour after the shop's open. They're probably all going to be gone. So you're going to want to get there early if you want to get your hands on this one. All right, on to my last book that I'm going to talk about. It's my book of the week. It's Justice League number 42, written by Robert Venditti. Pencils in this one are by Aaron Lopresti. We have inks by Matt Ryan, colors by David Barron, and letters by Tom Napolitano. I love Scott Snyder's run on Justice League. I thought the Justice League Doom War was a lot of fun. It didn't necessarily come to the conclusion that I thought it would. I almost feel like it didn't have a conclusion, because we're still seeing threads of it play out. I've talked about this before. We've got the DC story. We've got the Doom story. We've got the Leviathan story, Year of the Villain type stuff that's all still kind of going on, hasn't been wrapped up. And that being said, Snyder did move on from the book, and Robert Venditti took over. Now, I'm a big Robert Venditti fan. I usually love the kind of stuff he does. I think he's the greatest Hawkman writer to ever write the character, in that he's been able to make sense of almost all the history of Hawkman and tie it all together and have it work, which is just a Herculean feat. And he's made the character fun and interesting, more so than he's ever been before. I loved what he did on Green Lantern, because it was the same kind of thing. He was able to take a character that had been around for a really, really long time and bring fresh ideas to that character. And, you know, he followed up Jeff Johns, who I just mentioned it earlier in his podcast, was like beloved for his run. So that was a tough act to follow, and I felt like he did a really, really good job on that. So when I heard he was going to be taking over Justice League, I was pretty excited, and I had pretty high expectations. That being said, Venditti has exceeded my expectations. Like, right from day one, right from the first issue, it's been nonstop action with Justice League. And the story that Snyder told, like, I really enjoyed it, and it felt epic, and it felt fantastical, and it felt important, and it felt like it was very central to the DC universe. But maybe because the ideas were so big, it didn't feel like intimate, if you know what I'm saying, where it didn't feel, there wasn't an immediacy to it. Yeah, there was a threat, but you just felt like you were watching this giant space opera that was like really big. And because everything was so big, it kind of felt far away, you know, it wasn't real visceral, if you know what I mean. You felt, at least I did, a little detached from it, just because it was so big and huge, you couldn't like really sink your teeth into it. Venditti's run, it's the exact opposite. Like, everything feels like it's an immediate threat. It's all happening right there. The action, the fight scenes. Doug Mankey did the art on the first two issues of Venditti's Justice League run. Now we have Lopresti art, and it didn't skip a beat. There's a great scene sequence with the Flash that had all that you know, visceral feel, and the stakes are high. And man, I didn't know that I could like Justice League more than what Snyder did, But man, this Venditti, I mean, it's only three issues, but the idea, the conceit overall for his first arc is the Earth is being invaded. You know, classic Justice League type story to tell. Being invaded by Daxamites. And for those not familiar with DC history, they're from the planet Daxam, and they have similar powers to Superman, but to them, lead is what is kind of their kryptonite. But some of those weaknesses have been mitigated by sort of the big bad of the series, who brought the Daxamites to invade Earth. So the Justice League are really up against it. They're basically facing a whole army of Superman or Supermen who don't have a weakness, who don't have a vulnerability to kryptonite. So the stakes are super high. And just as powerful as these beings are, like how are they going to defeat? How are the Justice League going to defeat them? You know, so again, you've got the stakes feeling really high, and you've got great action and incredible art, which just makes for like wonderful comics. Like, I don't think if you haven't been reading Venditti's Justice League, I don't think you can pick up issue 42 and not go, oh, this is amazing, and immediately go pick up 40 and 41 and get caught up. I think if you love comics, that's what's going to happen. Like, it's just a fact. It's that good. And the other thing I really like is the team dynamic. Venditti kind of shifts it around a little bit in terms of, okay, these are heroes who have all worked together for a long time. They're friends. They know each other. But there's an interesting dynamic in that when you think about it, you've got the Justice League here. It's a bunch of type A personalities. They're not always going to get along in terms of agreeing with what the best solution or the best next step is, especially in a situation where the fate of the world is at stake. And it's not something that you really see that has been explored a lot. It's been explored some, but being able to explore that without it being petty or backbiting or feeling really like you're watching a soap opera is interesting, because at the end of the day, these people are still heroes. And they still want what's best, and they trust each other, and they're going to give each other the benefit of the doubt. So the way Venditti's able to still keep that backbone to the relationships, but yet explore how they come at the problems and the situations that they're faced with from different angles, and there's a little bit of dynamic there between, okay, who's calling the shots? Is it Batman? Is it Superman? Is it Jon Stewart? It's just really interesting to see it put out there so overtly as what Venditti is doing. So, love the issue. It's definitely my pick of the week. And, the art by Aaron Lopresti, like I said earlier, Doug Monkey on the first two issues of Venditti's run. Now Lopresti, I feel like it's a smooth transition. Their art styles are similar enough. I don't think it's going to be jarring or anything in the trade. But really great work by Lopresti. I mean, I'm always happy when he's on a title. One of the things he does is he doesn't always use panel borders, which I think is interesting. I like when he kind of shifts things around like that and gets creative with his panel layouts and such. And then, like I said, that the flash sequence. Man, he really earned his paycheck on that flash sequence. It's really, really cool looking. And the whole idea of the plan that Justice League put into motion to try to defeat these Daxamites, you read it, and at the end, you realize what happens, and it just brings a smile to your face as a comic reader. You're like, yeah, I can't wait for the next issue. And that's the thing that I was getting at. Like, as much as I love Scott Snyder's run on Justice League, the Justice League Doom War, and there were things that would make me go, oh, wow, or oh, that's really cool, or oh, I can't wait for the next issue. It was never a cheer out loud kind of book where you just went, yeah, that's awesome, I can't wait for the next one, you know? And that's what Venditti's run is. It's like one of those books, one of those titles where you do find yourself smiling or cheering or just, you know, pumping your fist. 'Cause it's that engaging. It's it's really, really good. And I can't wait for more of his run. I hope he stays on it for a really, really long time. I'd love to get at least a 50 issue run on Justice League from Robert Venditti. Haven't had a chance to talk to him since his first couple issues of Justice League have come out. He's been super busy, and I haven't really wanted to reach out and bug him, but I may have to have him come on and talk a little bit about Justice League. Maybe when the first arc is over, he can come on and give us his thoughts about working on it. So anyway, those are the books that I'm going to talk about in detail. Let me give you a quick rundown on some other things you should be on the lookout for. First thing I'll mention is from Aftershock, Join the Future. It's from writer Zach Kaplan. We had Zach on a couple of weeks ago for Aftershock Monday talking about it. It's a great start. It's science fiction. It's a Western in a way, and I encourage you, if you're interested, go back and listen to that Aftershock Monday podcast. You can learn more about the title. Definitely pick it up tomorrow when you're at your comic shop. It's well worth your time. In addition to the comics I mentioned from DC, we've also got Harley Quinn number 71 and Lois Lane number 9. Over at Image, I mentioned Miracle Andolfo's Mercy number 1. We've also got Birthright number 42. And there's a new series coming from Jonathan Layman, Outer Darkness Chew number 1. Not sure what that's all about, but fans of Jonathan Layman are going to want to pick that up. Over at Marvel, Conan Battle for the Super Serpent Crown number 2 of 5. Chip Zdarsky's Daredevil is up to number 19. Dr. Doom is on issue number 6 from Christopher Cantwell. I've heard a lot of really, really great things about that title. So it's one I need to check out. Haven't read any of it yet. The Iron Man 2020 miniseries is halfway done with issue 3 of 6. Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 16. Miles is babysitting his little sister, from what I understand. We've also got Marvel's number 1 from Alex Ross and Kurt Busiek, which is a sequel to the Marvel's series from the 90s, which was super, super popular. So if you were a fan of that series, you're going to want to pick up Marvel number 1. There's also a title called Spider-Man Noir number 1. It's a 5-issue limited series. It's the Spider-Man Noir character like we saw in the Spider-Verse movie. That one's written by Margaret Stoll with art by Juan Ferreira. So just those two names right there, I was already in. Like, Margaret Stoll's an incredible writer. Juan Ferreira is one of my favorite artists working in comics today. And then on top of that, there is a cover of, I think it's just a regular version. I don't think it's like an incentive cover or anything like that. But it's by Dan Panosian, and it's awesome. It's so, so good. So I'm definitely picking that up. As soon as I saw that cover, I knew it was Dan's work, and I had to have it. And I actually was talking to Dan on Twitter today, and I like, man, you need to make a print of that, because I need that framed and hanging in my studio for sure. We also have a new Doctor Strange title starting called Strange Academy. So kind of in the vein of Harry Potter and Hogwarts, Doctor Strange is going to be teaching other people how to use magic. So that's hitting stands today as well. Last thing I'll mention is over at Vault Comics, we have Money Shot number 5. That's from writer Tim Seeley. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet, but I've heard a lot of people talking about how great Money Shot is. So if you're curious, check it out. Let me know what you think. So those are the titles that I think you might be interested in that are hitting stands today. If you have any opinions on anything I might have missed or I should definitely be picking up, be sure to reach out to me on social media and let me know. Otherwise, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.